The Education Gadfly Show starts now. Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my co-host, a man due for a big raise now that Congress has upped the minimum wage, Rick Hess.
How you doing, Mikey?
I'm doing good, Rick. How you doing, man?
I'm good. Welcome. We're back from vacation.
That's right. How was that vacation?
It was good. Good. Read some good books. Chilled out. Good sun.
Very nice. Well, speaking of a sunny vacation, Liam here is heading off to London with his girlfriend for the week.
Known for its sunshine and happy waves. What are you doing in London, Liam?
I was just going to visit some museums and try to eat as cheaply as possible.
Man, the food in London is weak.
Checker tells me it's actually pretty good.
No, what does Checker know? When does he travel?
Pretty frequently.
Oh.
Yep. He travels. Okay.
So, our listeners should know that before we came on the air, Rick had all kinds of funny jokes about London that we thought were sharing with you, but he apparently has an inability to actually repeat them on the air. So instead, we just have this useless banter. But you know what else happened over the holidays is that Liam developed this problem with hugging.
That's true. You've got this huggability crisis, huh, Liam?
A bit. I mean, I don't know when and when it is not appropriate to hug.
Yeah. See, Liam and I had a meeting with a colleague, nice lunch meeting, and afterwards I gave her a hug, and then Liam went in to hug her, and what happened, Liam?
I mean, she backed away. She looked a little scared. I don't think we were on the hugging yet level. I thought that's what we did after meetings.
What are you were you giving her the crazy eyes?
I hope not.
I thought that's what we did after meetings. Because Checker is known for his
big bear hugs.
Yeah. So the question here, I mean, Jen, so in these kind of situations when, you know, you're out to lunch with a colleague and you're not sure whether or not to hug them, I mean, can you give us, you know, the woman's perspective to hug or not to hug?
I think you got to wait and see if the woman goes for it. She sets the standard. So, you know what? If you're not on the hugging level yet, you're not there yet, I guess.
Okay. So here it is. The woman has to initiate the hug.
It's a little bit like date rape in college, huh?
What?
Oh!
I'm just saying. Otherwise, you get in trouble. I'm just saying. What is that?
Oh, Rick, I cannot believe you just said that.
Jackass sound.
I'm just saying. I mean, isn't that exactly where you get in trouble? Like, those sophomore year at Michigan, Mike?
No, Rick. That was not my personal experience. Oh, Rick.
Right.
2007 is off to a good start with Rick Hess. Well, listeners, if you would like to email us anything, especially an email telling us how appalled you are at Rick's last comment, we'd love to hear from you at letters@edexcellence.net.
Which part was appalling?
The date rape reference.
It was just an analogy.
Okay. We're going to move right past that and start with a game of Pardon the Gadfly. Then we have an illuminating interview with blogger Alexander Rousseau. He's got new real estate at edweek.org.
Ooh.
We're going to talk about that. And finally, in-house weirdo Liam will lift us to new heights of understanding with some education news of the weird. So let's play Pardon the Gadfly. Three topics for 90 seconds each.
Now, Mike, you were going to explain that it's just not just news of the weird.
See, listeners, Liam wrote into the script some Japanese word that I can't – not possible. All right. I'm going to give it a try. It's samyak samadhi, right concentration. Oh, this isn't even Japanese. What is this? This is Hindi. It allows one to follow the Noble Eightfold Path. I don't even know what that means, but we're going to get to it in News of the Weird.
So how come you wrote date rape into my script, Liam? I'm always getting in trouble here.
Oh, wouldn't you wish? Okay, Jen, get us started with news. Wait, what are we doing? Pardon the Gadfly. This is off to a heck of a start, listeners.
Go for it. Topic one. Education Week recently released Quality Counts 2007, in which it ranked each state and D.C. in a chance for success index. The index's indicators, however, had little to do with education and a lot to do with the education levels and salaries of parents. Mike, what does this report actually tell us about education in the states?
Well, it actually tells us very little about education in the States. I mean, let me give you a little bit of background here. You know, Quality Counts has been around now for 10 years.
It's so what exactly is Quality Counts?
All right, so it's this annual report that this newspaper, Education Week, puts out. In the previous 10 years, what they were doing was measuring state policies and whether or not students in each state were achieving at high levels.
For example.
All right. So they were tracking whether or not states had rigorous standards, if they had testing in every grade. And then they looked at test score results on the national assessment, came up with a report card, graded the states. And it was always a big to-do, and it got huge press coverage and really has been driving standards-based reform for 10 years. All right. So this year, what do? They basically decide to abandon standards-based reform, and instead they focus on whether or not kids have a chance to succeed based entirely, really, on how wealthy the state is.
Well, when you say how wealthy the state is, for example.
All right. So for example, so they look at, they want to look at a cradle to the grave, they say. So they look at pre-K, at before students enter school. And instead of looking at policies, you know, our state's providing preschool programs to poor kids, for example. They look instead at how many kids in the state are poor, saying that, you know, the wealthier the kids are, the better chance they have to succeed and being ready to learn. Well, that's all about demographics. It's really nothing
that's
that
probably true, though.
Well, it's true, but it has nothing to do with education policy per se. It has nothing to do with what schools can actually control. Then at the adult level, in terms of outcomes for adults, they look at income levels and employment and things like that and say that that is a result of the education system. But the problem is, you know, you look at, I don't know, adults working in Virginia, for example, who do have good salaries and high employment, but those adults didn't necessarily go to school in Virginia. You know, people cross lines in this country all the time, cross state borders. I mean, isn't this crazy?
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. It's a little bit like saying the U.S. is the best school system in the world because we have highest level of family income in the world.
That's exactly right.
And the reality is, of course, that the quality of life in the state and economic success is a product of the university system, of the employment opportunities, of a whole bunch of factors which have nothing to do with whether or not the schools in the state are any good.
Rick, that was an excellent point you made.
Hey, that's what I do, baby.
All right. Topic number two, Jen.
All right. In an article titled The Incredibles, the New York Times profiles several college underclassmen at prestigious schools who are bored with their work and found high school more challenging. One MIT student took only 4 pages of notes in 2 weeks of classes. Rick, is this a problem?
I like The Incredibles. I think it was better than Cars. I was a big fan of Cars.
You're talking about the movie now.
Well, was there anything else in the – oh, I'm sorry. I think I tuned out. I was thinking about Mr. Incredible. And do you know, I totally was into Mr. Incredible's wife.
Yeah. You thought she was pretty hot.
Oh, she was good-looking cartoon superhero wife.
You know, but nothing beats Ariel from The Little Mermaid.
Oh.
She was pretty, wasn't she? I kind of had a little crush on her myself.
Jessica Rabbit.
Oh.
Ooh, Liam. Oh.
And she acted – you know, what was neat about Jessica Rabbit was she acted opposite a live-action person.
You know,
I mean, that's a heck of a cartoon. You can act opposite Bob Hoskins.
She's just not my type, though.
Really?
I don't go for rabbits.
Really?
Yeah.
I think that's a little anthropomorphic of you.
Well, you know, that's just my opinion. All right, but back to the article here.
Oh, right.
Right.
I mean, this is junk journalism. College kids have slacked off forever, especially at elite schools. We don't have any good we don't have any good systematic and reliable evidence. We have those surveys of students. Which suggests that, you know, kids at state universities, there's good reason to think they're working at least as hard as kids at Yale and Princeton and Harvard. And that was certainly my personal experience, you know, say teaching undergrads, you know, at places like University of Virginia and Harvard. And there's no reason to particularly believe this is getting better or worse in any particular point in time. It does raise some questions about this notion of higher education accountability, the way we're talking about it. Mostly what we're talking about is making sure low levels of skills are being mastered at the mass attendance institutions. That does nothing to talk about whether or not we're challenging kids at MIT or Stanford.
Well, that's right. I mean, so the question is, if there are kids coming into MIT and Stanford who are incredibly well prepared, and there may be, it's anecdotal, you know, are these institutions challenging them enough? If not, are, you know, are we going to see these kids just, you know, tuning out? You know, maybe they'll just drop out like Bill Gates did and go start a startup and make a lot of money.
I mean, the fact that we don't have any sense of whether or not these kids were coming out of high school, you know, prepared for college, are being more or less challenged than they were 30 years ago.
Very nice, Rick. Another substantive comment.
Hey, baby, I'm all about substance in the new year.
Except for that whole digression on which cartoon character was hot.
Oh, yeah.
But that's important stuff, too.
Yes, it is.
Topic three, Jen.
All right. Dallas is changing what it means to be a principal. From now on, school leaders there won't worry about the paper-pushing administrative tasks. They'll focus on boosting their school's academic performance. Job interviews for principals are set to become more rigorous and more merit-based, and those principals whose schools meet academic targets could be eligible for $10,000 bonuses. Why aren't schools everywhere doing this?
Got me, Mike.
No, it sounds very promising, and you know, at first blush too, it seems promising that we're talking about Texas, which is a right-to-work state. So perhaps you know these principals really do have more control over hiring and firing and all those other things that principals in other parts of the country don't have. You know, although just last week, you know, Kate Walsh and the National Council for Teacher Quality came out with their new database on collective bargaining agreements and related documents, and you look at that and you find out that a place like Texas actually has just as onerous, you know, regulations and mandates in their handbooks as other states have in their collective bargaining agreements. You and Marty West have made this point before. So, you know, yeah, I don't know if that has anything to do with this article or not, but I thought it was interesting.
No. I mean, it's certainly relevant. I mean, I think the point about Dallas is it's a lot like talking about ProComp in Denver, the teacher pay system that they've implemented over the last year. This sounds great. It's promising. So much of this stuff is actually in the execution. It's easy to talk the talk. If Dallas actually does implement what they announced they're going to do, it's a step forward. It's not the model system. It's not the best possible system, but it's an improvement.
Now, here's a question. Now, when you read the article, it's clear that what they are doing is trying to recruit from within and really do a better job of identifying talented people from within. This is different from a model, for example, John Schnur's New Leaders for New Schools, which is all about finding people from other fields, bringing them into the principalship. Do you have an opinion? Which is better?
You know, I mean, I think it depends on the district. It depends on what you're trying to do. If you're trying to staff, you know, pretty effective schools and you need people who know how the system works and know the pedagogy and curriculum, makes more sense to hire inside. If you need people who understand management, understand IT, understand challenges and turnarounds in a way that you don't have that kind of skill set in the district, makes more sense to look outside. So what you probably want is a mix.
Very good. All right. That is it for our first Pardon the Gadfly of the year, Rick.
Actually, the second because...
Well, you weren't here for that.
I wasn't
here. That's right. Okay. Well, we now turn to our interview with Alexander Rousseau, blogger extraordinaire. Let's take a listen. We're here today with Alexander Rousseau, the blogger who writes for This Week in Education and now is going to have a spot on edweek.org. We're going to talk about his blog and his perspectives on education. Alexander, welcome to the Education Gadfly Show.
Thanks for having me on.
So I have to point out, Alexander, that you have stated in your blog that you are anti-podcast. And in fact, I think you called one of our first Gadfly shows a car wreck. And yet you come on our show. So have you changed your mind?
No, I just have no integrity whatsoever.
Okay. I'm glad we could clarify that from the beginning.
Yeah.
All right, good. Well, lots to talk about today. First of all, congratulations on your new real estate on edweek.org. You know, Jay Matthews came out with that list recently, ranking education blogs. And I think This Week in Education came out 15. EduWonk by Andy Rotherham, a bit of a rival of yours, came out number 6. What do you think? Think this edweek.org real estate is going to help you shoot to the top?
Well, in terms of readers, the edweek.org location is definitely going to shoot me to the top. And I should point out, though it matters to almost no one, that that wasn't a numerical ranking. It was just a numbering.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
Now, so I'm very happy about the move, though. It's exciting. I'll have access to all sorts of real-life teachers and principals instead of people like you and me and Rick.
Now let me ask you about the statement you had about these numerical rankings. Now, Alexander, frankly, should we really believe you when it comes to math? I mean, wasn't it you recently who had a post about the Fordham Foundation Insider Survey where you talked about the 9 insiders we surveyed and then went on to list the 12 participants in that survey?
Yeah, no, I'm the product of a Montessori education. Okay. And what can I say?
All right. Now, let me ask a little bit about this rivalry between you and EduWonk, Andy Rotherham. I mean, is this all in good fun or is there something more substantive here? I mean,
most of the time it's good fun. It's entertaining to other folks. Sometimes it's entertaining to me and sometimes it's entertaining to me when it's not entertaining to him. But a lot of it has to do with the fact that Andy presents himself as more than he is sometimes. And So it's fun to knock him down a little bit.
So what does he represent himself as?
Oh, you know, he's got an opinion on a lot of things, and sometimes I think his opinions go farther than his expertise.
Okay, I see. All right. Well, let's talk about one issue, national standards and tests. Obviously, you know, all our listeners know that Fordham is strongly supportive of that. You were in town the other day for a big press conference that Senator Dodd had over at the New America Foundation. What do you think? Have you changed your mind yet about whether or not this might be politically feasible this time around?
First of all, congratulations on the event and the collaboration with New America. I think that's really interesting. And
are you sucking up to us, Alexander?
Only so that I can slam you in about 13 seconds.
Okay, you can just slam us. You don't have to suck up to us.
No, it's true. I know I admire you for taking an issue that I thought was a dead dog and making it so prominent. But my political analysis, for what it's worth, is still that this is a tough thing to do. I was actually on the Hill 10 years ago when President Clinton tried to do national standards. I was working for Bingaman. We worked it hard. The Clinton folks